Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. In this instant, back again 24 hours after our last rendition. So, Bud, happy to be able to have a little bit of a conversation here, being able to look back at Jimbo Fisher's opening press conference, initial day of practice, what little can be gleaned from something like that. We'll talk about just the information of the day, certainly have a little bit more of certainty as far as health of players and maybe a little bit of a better direction as far as grades, but may still have to wait another 10 days or so on that to be absolutely certain. But excited about the official opening of camp and the conversation that we'll have tonight, and want to begin this podcast as we do with all thanking our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. And Bud, I will break from tradition a little bit and not necessarily talk about Louisiana Hot Sauce, but mention a product called Red Rooster, and it is a hot sauce. It is, honestly, the flavor profile is pretty similar to Louisiana. It is made by our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce. I didn't just completely go off the farm there and start talking about a competitor during an ad read, but it's not quite as widely available. You may have to include it on an Amazon order or something like that for your quickest way of being able to sample that product. But it is something that if you want a little bit of an alternative, it's very economical as well, but just a little bit of a bolder flavor and a little bit of an alternative if you're just out there shopping the hot sauce world.
Hey, can you hear me typing there? Because that's me pulling up Amazon.com on my computer and Red Rooster hot sauce.
I'll give you a hint. The color scheme is going to be pretty consistent to the original.
Yes. Oh, I can get one bottle, a 12-ouncer for $3.95, or several 6-ouncer. I like. You can also get the gallon. If you really like the stuff, you can buy the gallon, which I feel like that is dedication.
It's a big step. It's a commitment to some hot sauce.
It really is. It's also if you – so, all right, talk me through this, because when you said it, I figured, okay, this sounds like Louisiana's version of sriracha, but I'm guessing it's not.
It's not. It's not sriracha. It's really just another – kind of it's of the same genre as Louisiana. The flavor is a little bit bolder, it's a little more spicy. You would want to, it's not like Atomic or anything, but you would want to, particularly when you first started using it, just use it sparingly and get a better idea as to how to use the flavor and control the flavor. But hey, look, if you're like me and you were cleaning out your desk and you just found $20 in Amazon recently that you didn't know you had, it's worth trying. It's worth adding, you know, $2 or $3 on your next order and seeing what you think of it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try this out. Actually, I'm taking off for a little Hawaiian vacation here before this could actually get to my house. But otherwise, I'm going to actually add it on to my order at the end of the month. Looks pretty good.
Well, man, we had the significant moment of time that we do every year, and that is the Jimbo Fisher opening press conference. Went longer than I can remember, at least most of them, and a decent amount of information, a lot of just stock answers and a lot of dumb questions at the same time as well. Not a whole lot, and I'm not taking shots at anybody in the Tallahassee media, so I don't even want to start to walk down that road. It was more a call-in player, caller that I was laughing at, but don't want to have people misinterpret things there. You know, pretty much your standard presser, standard opening presser, but at the same time, a decent amount of information and some things that we can use to have a little bit better understanding as to what the team will look like ultimately come September 2nd.
Indeed, yeah, Jimbo. What was your kind of main takeaway from his demeanor? Because I'll give you mine. Last year, I think he got burned a little bit by how positive he was in his team, especially how he was at AC Media Day to media both on and off the record, and in the press conferences early on. I think that kind of – this year he seems to be a little more reserved, but yet at the same time, I think he likes a lot of parts about this team, Ingram, as do I.
I thought he was pretty direct. Fisher is always an interesting character. You can kind of tell if there's hot points or things that bother him. Not necessarily the greatest person at masking some of his answers at times. I thought he was direct. I thought he was fairly comfortable. I don't know if you're examining like the body language of Fisher, and I've watched it and I've listened to it As bizarre as that sounds, but I don't know that there's a whole lot to take away from that. A couple of kids who he gave different answers than maybe I would have thought of as far as how they progressed throughout the summer. But as far as the overall demeanor, I thought he was a little, looked a little tired, looked a little, at times a little frustrated. But at the same time looked pretty similar to what I remember him looking in at similar points in time in his previous 8 years.
Yeah, I think he should be really relaxed. He just signed a de facto 10-year contract, right? I mean, it's 8 years, but there's two options that are triggered if he wins 9 games, which, look, I got a pretty good feeling Jimbo Fisher's going to win 9 games. So it's essentially a 10-year fully guaranteed contract. You know, the one, I guess, the best news of the day that I took away from it was that the entire team is healthy, he said. Nobody would really be restricted. Obviously, Brady Scott is the only kid out there who won't be practicing for a bit because he got hit when he was on his scooter. And that includes George Campbell, going to be practicing, was out there today, fully participating. Obviously, well, I guess, Inger, before we talk about the grade stuff, we kind of need to figure out what our rules are because George Campbell is the guy we're not allowed to talk about.
Yeah, we
seem until he does something.
Running into this rule a little bit. I would say...
what is does something in your mind? Because we need to kind of clarify this.
We do. I think I'm going to set the bar fairly low here. If George Campbell has 2 receptions in the Alabama game, I think we can officially bring him back into the fold and consider that something and consider that a decent amount of the offense. Now, look, 2 catches, say that's for 30 yards, and if you get similar production to that, you're looking at a guy who might have around 500 yards receiving for the year, which I'd hope he'd have a little bit more production. He certainly has all the physical skill set in the world, but a 500-yard receiving season for somebody that has otherwise failed to make any meaningful contribution would be a small step, but a step very much in the right direction.
I think I agree with you there. Now, the only problem is his main thing has not been effort ever, right? Like, there's no indication he wasn't trying. He's just had, like, mm-hmm. kind of bizarre injuries, groin injury, core injury, all that kind of stuff. I think he had an ankle at one point. I'm almost tempted, Inger, to say, look, if George Campbell goes through fall camp, all of fall camp, and there's like, what, 30 days of it this year? If he goes through all of fall camp and does not spend more than 1 day in a non-contact jersey, you know, or riding the exercise bike over there on the side, then I might be tempted to say, okay, we're allowed to talk about George Campbell now in a regular show. We will obviously discuss him in our wide receiver preview show, which will be coming up because you have to. But in the regular show, my thing is, can he put together a streak of health, right, where he's not having setbacks, he's not having freakish injuries? Because the physical ability has always been there.
Absolutely, and I think you bring up a good point. It hasn't been any type of, he hasn't been selfish in the way that he's had, like, dictated his time and hadn't been an effort issue. He's just been unlucky, and the kid's got all the physical talent. If he continues to have what, by all accounts, is a pretty good attitude about the way he approaches things, then you would certainly hope for him to be able to have a healthy fall practice period here. And yeah, if he's very much in the rotation and somebody that appears to be able to contribute significantly towards the Alabama game and has made it through a camp and in condition to be able to put himself in a place like that, then yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I was extending the bar a little bit too far as what I'd like to see from him, but I'll stick to my 2-catch requirement for now.
All right. Well, in any case, we're not going to be revisiting this issue for a couple weeks because none of our conditions can come through until, you know, at least several weeks. Yours perhaps another week in addition. The other thing Jimbo Fisher said that we liked was that there are no grades issues impacting kids' ability to play right now at the start of camp. Now, I know you had a very astute observation on this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of an asterisk on that, and the fact that the final grades don't come out until August 10th, August 9th, somewhere in that area, about a week and a half from now, and give or take 48 hours. So we'll have an absolute certainty, fairly certain here, or excuse me, we'll have an absolute certainty fairly soon here. But I do think that trended in the positive direction on that front, just from people that I've talked to, and I'll let you give your own opinion. And I think Florida State is in a place between grades and health to be, as far as the macro review of the roster, to be in as good a shape as they've been entering a camp that I can remember, certainly in the past 5 years.
Yeah, man, they got a lot of big, healthy bodies on this team. Guys look like they've put in the work over the summer. I'm excited about this team. I think this is going to be a very good ball club. They're probably going to come out being rated third or fourth in the nation behind Bama, Ohio State, and maybe USC, but maybe not. And I don't think that's unfair. You know, you've got a young quarterback who's very promising. You've got pretty much everybody returning on the offensive line. You've got literally the entire defense returning with the exception of DeMarcus Walker and Marquez White. Receiver scares me some, but a lot of potential there. And if you're running backs, good gosh, man. Maybe that's where we'll go next with this, but this might be the best total stable of running backs Florida State has had in a long while.
It's an embarrassment of riches, and it's pretty exciting to think about what your first four options could be at running back. I mean, it's just a plethora of talent that they've assembled at that position, and you've got a. So why don't we start the conversation here with Jacques Patrick? And that was one of the more interesting answers that I think Fisher gave in the press conference that he had today. And, Bud, you want to just go ahead and take a listen to that, and then we can bounce our ideas off of it?
Let's do that.
No, Jacques Patrick's just starting back. Is that great? I always ask him to do, and the three starts he's had have, what, 200-some yards, 180 yards, about 150 yards, something like that. A bunch of touchdowns. He's earned that right, and he'll go out there, and if he plays the best, he'll play. And he'll compete with the other guys. Jacquez looks great. His body looks great. He can catch. He can run. He's proven he can do it at a good level. Love everything about him. He's got to go, continue to go play. And then you'll have to have other backs because of the position does dictate that. Then we got to find out which young guys are going to step up and prove that they can do it. And if they do it better, they'll play. If they don't, then he'll play. I mean, it's that simple. But I'm very excited about watching Jacquez.
Okay, so Jacquez Patrick, the idea that Jacquez Patrick is your starter, I think is to be expected. I don't know that you necessarily would have had anybody else named for that, particularly leaving camp. Patrick is a guy, as we've mentioned time and time again, very much made a positive step and made the transformation that was requested from him, from the coaching staff. And showed a lot of positive signs last year, and Fisher was right to point out the productivity that he had. But there does seem to be maybe a small twinge of hesitation or something that I'm reading into that may not even be there, but you just get the feeling that, yes, Patrick is the starter in name, and yes, Patrick will be, the guy when the first-team offense takes the first snap in practice, he'll be there, but you do get a little bit of a feeling that not necessarily that Patrick's going to be replaced, but ultimately Cam Akers may be, he may not be your starter in name, but when we look back and we review this season in January, I'd be surprised, bearing injuries or things outside the field of play, if Cam Akers was not your starter as far as a role of production and perhaps carries consumed.
Yeah, one thing we said before the show, we were looking for analogies. Look, Jacquez Patrick might be your opening day starter, but he's not going to pitch game one of your playoff series, I don't think. But look, Fisher says he's your starter, he's earned the right, and then literally in the same breath says, but the best players will play. So there's a couple of elements here. Number one, look, we've long thought that maybe Jimbo Fisher doesn't like Jacquez Patrick as a player that much, right? Like, we've speculated about that before. I don't think we're the only ones. I know Jeff Cameron's talked about, doesn't seem to like to play him very much, that type of thing. But, and I get, maybe there's some reasons why. He's a big guy, but he doesn't always run big and run tough. He doesn't have great speed. He has worked on his body a lot this summer. I've seen Jacquez Patrick literally since he was a freshman in high school, I think. And I remember the park we were at outside of Orlando at a camp. And he said, hey, coach, do you think I'll ever get any scholarship offers? Right? So, I've seen this kid for, was he a junior now? For 7 years. He's never been ripped. He's ripped now. Jacquez Patrick has transformed his body in an encouraging way. Does that mean that he's going to run with great power, with great forward lean, with improved quickness. Not necessarily. Some of that's just kind of an innate trait, and some of it you can learn. But I do think that Fisher, in saying this, is sort of rewarding him for the work ethic that he put in this summer. And maybe some of that was because of the fact that Cam Akers came in and was the star of spring, right? You know, so if you're Jackass Patrick, you know you got to bust your butt in order not to get passed up. I agree with you. I think Akers will eventually have more carries, assuming, you know, they all stay healthy. And, you know, a guy like Amir Rasul is a player that Jimbo Fisher keeps praising and keeps talking about and saying he has a role in this team. And you know, if he can just stay healthy, you got to see what he can do. And I should say, by the way, I've heard he says that both publicly and privately, like people who he talks to, who he doesn't know I talk to. He's been very, very effusive with his praise of Amir Rasul as well. And then you got the, you know, another freshman like Z-Man, you know, Zaquandre White, who I've been a big fan of, partially because he's down here by me, but because he really does run with natural forward lean and great pad level. I love this stable of running backs, man. When we talked about how this needs to be a running team, part of that's because, you know, the passing game may still be a work in progress. We'll see. But part of it, too, is because you need to take advantage of guys like this when you got them on your roster.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a embarrassment of riches, and will be a lot of fun to see how this process plays itself out and how it works out. If we're going to talk about the running backs, Bud, probably no better transition than to talk about the offensive line. And I think the offensive line probably was the piece of the team that generated the most conversation as far as just what the depth chart looked like and what they officially announced today.
Yeah, so that was interesting. Remember, in spring, a lot of us were like, well, is Rick Leonard going to move over to left tackle because he had a promising performance there in the Orange Bowl against Michigan at right tackle? And the answer that the staff consistently gave was, no, he's comfortable at right tackle, right? Remember, and Josh Ball was playing some left tackle, and I think Brock Rubel was as well. Well, Jimbo Fisher comes out today and just flat out says, hey, Rick Leonard drew left tackle. Surprise!
Mm-hmm.
So, Ingram, on a scale of if you could afford, if you could put 1 to 5 fakes here, how many fakes would you give this early on offensive line depth chart?
How many fakes?
I'm stealing this idea from Brian Cook of MGO Blog, by the way. He always assigns a 1 to 5 fakes rating on recruit 40 times. Like when a kid's like, I run like a 4.15, well, that would be like 5 out of 5 fakes.
So if I say it's 5 fakes, it's the most fictitious ranking I can give it.
Correct. Yeah, five fakes is like just full tomfoolery.
I would say this is somewhere around 2.5.
Okay, I think I'm cool with that. Now, do I think Rick Leonard is going to be one of your starting tackles? Yeah, and he might start at left tackle, just, you know, where they have him right now. But I'm not 100% convinced that Brock Rubel is going to be your starter at right tackle. And look, we've discussed this for a long time. Rubel was always more of a long-term project. I can't fully rule out the possibility that he's turned a corner. Fisher did praise him for kind of transforming his body a little bit in the offseason. So all that's potentially true. And yet he still has not shown the foot speed that you need against top-quality opponents to be effective. Maybe if they're playing him there, it's a sign they are going to be, you know, super run-heavy because he's not that bad of a run blocker. But, you know, Josh Ball, I thought, had somewhat of an encouraging spring. We'll see how he goes. And look, Derek Kelly is still in this mix as well, and maybe Juwan Williams. So at least they have a lot of bodies there. I don't know if they have a lot of great bodies there, but we'll see what they can pull together. I agree with you. I'm not convinced that this is going to be the final thing.
I think there's a little bit of seniority baked into this part of the depth chart in particular.
Yeah, and they always swap offensive line around. Like, they cross-train the heck out of these guys because, you know, they know somebody's going to go down with injury. By the way, another good point here that somebody brought up, I brought up as well, but I think somebody else may have brought up as well on Twitter. Look, fall classes haven't started yet. If you're a coach, it really behooves you to say really positive comments about everybody.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want the kids to transfer. Like, if you're Jimbo Fisher, the dumbest thing you could do would be come out and say, look, guys, it's really obvious Cam Akers is going to be our starter because we're only going to have him for probably 36 total games before he goes to the NFL. Because if he says that, what's Jackass Patrick going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Yeah.
You know, what's Amir Rasul going to do? Same thing. And you need those guys. to be significant contributors on this football team. Same thing with the offensive line. You come out and be like, all right, so we got six upperclassmen who are now not going to start because I think these underclassmen are going to start. Well, that could kill your depth if those transfers don't go your way. So if it's Coach Elliott out there, everybody is showing a lot of progress and getting a lot of reps, and really, I just can't make up my mind as to who's going to start until fall classes start.
I like your cynicism there. Well done. Maybe the other piece that ties these two together, as far as talking about the running backs, talking about the offensive line, and another piece of audio that I wanted to incorporate into this, Bud, is if you're going to talk about those two positions and talk about the prevalence of run pass options, was this Corey or Jeff Cameron who asked this question? I guess it doesn't particularly matter.
It was Jeff Cameron, and if you're watching the video, Fisher does not seem super pleased to get this.
Didn't love this question. It appeared, or the just he does. I don't think he loves talking about it, and I think he's a little bit defensive and. I'm not calling Jimbo Fisher a liar, but I'm not sure the facts that he presents in this answer are 100% accurate either. So why don't we go ahead and listen to it, and then we can break down his comment about run-pass option a little bit more.
We do them. We do probably, I would say, 8 to 14 a game. Did last year. Always have. I mean, I think it's a dumb rule. I think it's dumb. It's unfair to defenses. I'm an offensive guy. Guys at more than a yard down, it's a penalty. But they are what we do. We do them. We've done them. Our bubble screens, our screen games are all RPOs. Those aren't scripted. I mean, they're decisions. All those touchdowns to Kermit and all those different throws and all that screen game we do, that's all that. The pad, the slants, a lot. We do a lot of RPOs. So, I mean, we do them. And you have to adapt to them. You're not going, you know, just because I say I don't like them doesn't mean I'm not going to do them because I'm going to adapt to the rules. But we do them and we'll continue to do them.
All right. So a couple things here. Ingram, we've long said on this show that Jimbo Fisher does not like run-pass options. He thinks it's a bastardization of the game. He thinks it's beneath him, et cetera, right? Like, people are like, well, Jimbo's never said that. I was like, yeah, not publicly, but if you got sources, you kind of know some stuff sometimes. Well, now he's finally on the record saying he doesn't like it. He thinks it's bad for the game, thinks the rules should be changed. You know, thinks that, you know, basically his answer there is pretty clear. Now, he also claims that FSU does it, says they run 8 to 14 of them a game. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean you don't have to evolve with the game and take advantage of the rules. So, is he telling the truth here? Technically, yes.
It's some creative accounting. That's what I would call this.
I mean, you could classify some of the stuff Florida State does as run-pass options. However, Florida State does not run them in the same way that we commonly think about, okay, the complaints that come with the RPO game. That means linemen releasing downfield on pass plays, which causes linebackers or safeties to suck up because they're seeing these linemen so far downfield, which means that they are triggering because their read here is that it's a run play. Then all of a sudden, oh my God, no, it's not. How could I know this is a defender? Well, I couldn't because this lineman is now 6 yards downfield. Really ridiculous bastardization of the rules. And then you're throwing a pass behind me, the defender. That's happened to Florida State's defense. It happens to a lot of good defenses, and there's nothing you can really do about it as a defense. It's kind of indefensible. The only way to defend it is just to hope and pray the refs call it, which they don't. Florida State runs some stuff that Jimbo wants to call RPOs, but they're RPO kind of in name only. They're not really what we commonly refer to as RPOs, the ones that really take advantage of the rules against the defense. Now, he may just be too proud to do that. Or perhaps maybe if another team or two rips up FSU's defense this year using these and the refs don't call it again, maybe FSU will adopt some. But this idea that they're throwing the ball in the flat behind the line of scrimmage with linemen downfield, well, that's always been allowed.
Man, I was going to say,
it's behind the line of scrimmage.
That's since the beginning. Yeah,
that's not really what we're talking about when we're asking Jimbo about RPOs. The other thing here, I think, is that Florida State, best I can tell, and best the guys who I chat with can tell, I don't think Florida State does like any actual reading within the play on these RPOs. I think it's all sort of pre-snap RPO. And you know, that really ties into the idea of not throwing the ball down the field with this, because the only way you can really throw the ball down the field with the RPO is if you're actually reading what the backer's doing, right?
Like, it's a post-snap manipulation.
Absolutely. Correct. So if all you're doing is pre-snap, then that's not really in the true spirit of the RPO. That's, you're not, there's no real option in it. Like, it's, we should call this predetermined run or pass. So PRP is what I'm going to call these now instead of RPOs. These are PRPs, predetermined run pass, because that's what they are. You're not really making any sort of determination during the play.
If the numbers, if you're dictating what you're doing based off the numbers on the side of the ball before the ball snapped, or the number, that's not an RPO per se. It's not the RPO that we're talking about, certainly. Very much so talking about manipulating, like you said, backers and safeties post-snap and frying what are the traditional reads for those positions when playing defensive football.
Now, look, to be clear, the PRPs, you know, your sort of packaged plays, and we've talked about packaged plays before, kind of your bubble screen off the zone read, off inside zone, that type of stuff. Those are not bad plays. Those are very successful plays, but they're not the same type of plays, and they're not really the plays that we're referring to when we're discussing the RPOs that are really influencing the game of college football. I actually hate RPOs, by the way. I think they're just grossly unfair to a defense. It's not really within the spirit of the rules to have an offensive lineman blocking 5-6 yards downfield and not have it called. But look, you're good at what you rep, right? And for Fisher to say that they do run these and blah, 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 I know for a fact they don't rep these in practice. I've got my practice spies out there. They do not rep the RPO type stuff that you see like an Ole Miss do in practice, period. They are a very heavy red zone practice team. And that, I think, makes a lot of sense with FSU's personnel to go super heavy. RPOs are better when you have a lot of green grass and you don't necessarily, you know, run them quite as much in the red zone. Fisher believes in practicing the things that are the toughest the most as opposed to the easiest. He doesn't want his teams to get a false sense of self-confidence, believe it or not. I mean, after seeing the Louisville game last year and what the guys thought that was going to happen going into that. But look, those are a little more difficult to practice in the red zone. They also you know, take a look, like, think about this. Florida State is very bad at running the zone read somehow. I'm not saying it's a super easy thing to teach, but again, a college football team should not be so bad at running that if they actually care about it. But it's pretty clear that Fisher doesn't really believe in it, right? And they don't rep it in practice very much. I know that for a fact. That's not one of the things they practice that much.
You can watch the past 4 or 5 years of game tape and tell that they don't rep that. I mean, they're when they do deploy it in live action, they're uncomfortable with it. They're indecisive. It's something that's pretty clear that's not repped all that much during the week.
So you're good at what you rep. You're probably not going to be that great at what you don't rep. You only have limited hours. This is not something Jimbo Fisher emphasizes within his offense. It is still very much his offense. And I do think that if you don't rep the zone read and a lot of the QB read type elements, you're not going to be good at actual RPOs because the quarterback read part of that is a pretty big part. So it's sort of an integral part of the RPO is actually the quarterback read on a lot of these QB run type stuff. So that's another reason why I think Florida State doesn't do it, because they really don't rep or successfully run the building blocks very well. But at the same time, I don't want people to come away from this thinking, oh, Bud's saying FSU's offense sucks. No, it doesn't. It was a hell of an offense last year. I think it'll be really good again this year, especially when you use some of the opponent adjusted numbers that show just the incredible defenses FSU's had to face year after year, being in this league and also playing Florida and this year playing Alabama as well. I think it'll be another excellent offense. Jimbo Fisher is an excellent offensive coach, but it is a little bit disingenuous to claim that you run the RPOs just like everybody else, because you're not really running them in the fashion that teams are using them to exploit defenses big time. Maybe that'll change this year. We'll see.
Bud, want to always mention our friends with the For the Table Restaurant Group, and as we turn our focus to the upcoming football season, always want to remind both our, like, the student body part of our audience that is in Tallahassee consistently, Certainly the locals know all about the three options there. But also, if you're making your way to Tallahassee for a game or two this year, want to keep all three of their options in mind. Township, Centrale, their fantastic Italian, their Italian-themed restaurant that they've opened, and then always the constant that has been Madison Social. But if we're going to talk about Centrale, I don't think there's a whole lot of complexity that we need to bring, although there's some pretty great diverse options on their menu. But let's just talk about a couple of the pizzas that that may have caught our eye over the year or so that we've been associated with them.
Yeah, man, they got a lot of really good pies here. And, you know, they also deliver, which we'll talk about in a second. But I like the Red Face Calabrese. Pepperoni, sopressata, pork sausage, Calabrian chili, and basil. It's the pizza I usually get when I go to Central if I go with pizza. Man, they really do a nice job on this. They get the nice char on it from their brick oven. You can get the small, which is a 12 by 12, or the large 12 by 18, perfect for sharing. Ingram, you know, you can actually get delivery from them at pretty good hours, too. And they also deliver their brunch, which is pretty neat. But delivery pizza and parm, they use penny delivers and doorstep delivery. Delivery charge is only $3.99, so that's not bad at all on the doorstep delivery. Penny delivers is obviously only a penny. So make sure to go to centralitalian.com and click delivery for more information on that.
But I think this is a good back and forth here, and it's an honest discussion of Jimbo Fisher. And at the same time, we can be critical of some aspects of his offense, but you can't help but be reminded of this being his eighth year going into a camp. He's coached 7 years and suffered 17 losses in the process. I mean, that is hilariously consistent. And just look, you look back there, Florida State for a period of time was racking up 5-6 losses a season. And the dramatic turnaround that he's been able to implement, and it just a great trajectory that the program's been put on. And really, this could not have been couldn't have been a better marriage for Florida State to enter into with a football coach, as far as taking them from where they were at the end of the Bowden era to where they sit here August 1st in 2017.
I mean, 17 losses in 7 years. Ingram, there's a guy named Urban Meyer who, if you put his Florida and Ohio State tenures together, he's got that beat. And there's a guy named Nick Saban. And after that, you're running out of guys, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's pretty ridiculous. Remarkably consistent as a head coach. Never lost more than four games in a season, right? Four was the most ever. Played very difficult schedules consistently. Done great against them. National title, multiple conference titles. A heck of a coach. And, you know, one of the reasons I think he does do a good job, and he spoke about this today, is the need to see the whole picture, right? To manage your offense and defense together and not put your defense in bad spots or your offense in bad spots by being too heavily reliant on one area as a head coach and not the other. Clearly, he's an offensive head coach, and he still largely runs the offense. But I think for the most part, he has done a good job of it. He also said something today. He kind of made a comment. It was almost to himself, and he was like, "You know, but sometimes you got to win a game 49-48. And part of me wondered, I wonder if that is a sort of a commentary, you know, almost out loud, but also to himself about the state of the college game and just how easy it is to score points with the modern college offense, kind of like what we were just talking about there, and the need maybe to shift the narrative a little bit or shift your thinking in maybe some more tempo stuff, maybe, you know, pushing the tempo a little bit more, as opposed to slowing down, like I know he's very fond of doing. Maybe that makes more sense when you have much better depth than 99% of teams you play, when you have more talent than 99% of teams you play, when it makes sense to have that talent advantage be borne out over so many more snaps. You know, maybe don't mismanage the UNC game by playing for all those field goals there and having a miss, and maybe think, okay, to win this game, if I get to 45, we're good, you know? Because there are going to be games every year now with the way offense is called in college football. Your defense, even an elite defense, is going to give up something in the high 30s or 40s. It's just going to happen. Bama had one of the best defenses last year we've ever seen. and Clemson, a game that I know Jimbo Fisher's probably watched quite a bit. I would, because they're, you know, the most recent team to beat Alabama. Clemson got them basically because of tempo. If you look at the yards per play Clemson's racking up, for a lot of that game, it's not any good. And then when they get to those snaps, number like 70 to 97 or whatever they ran, their yards per play just shoots up dramatically. They had Bama gassed. They had them confused. They had them making mental errors finally. So I don't believe – look, we know that he's such an offensive purist and traditionalist and that he thinks a lot of this stuff is gimmicks and probably beneath him. I do hope that he's being open-minded and maybe willing to change some of this stuff and to look and to evolve with the game. Certainly his mentor, Nick Saban, probably thinks that all this RPO stuff and some of this tempo stuff is probably beneath him. But you know what? He changed. He did it because he saw that's how his defense was getting ripped up. I am very intrigued. Will Jimbo Fisher adapt this offense some? Look, it was already very good, but that doesn't mean there's not another level you can take it to. And something somebody said one time really hit home with me, this idea that you protect your defense by slowing down. Yeah, if you have really poor defensive depth, I can see that because you don't want the opponent to be able to take reps and take snaps against your backups if they're really crappy. But Florida State has one of the deepest defenses and deepest teams in the entire nation. So that doesn't apply. If you're Florida State, you protect your defense with points, right? You score. And then you dare the other team to score against you. You protect the defense with points, I think, is a motto Jimbo Fisher should really think about, as opposed to some of the more conservative, try to protect my defense by slowing down the game and giving my sort of undermanned opponents a chance to stay in the game more by playing fewer snaps. Fewer snaps, I don't think, is good for Florida State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's certainly situations where you may be trying to protect a certain part of your defense or something like that. But I think on the whole, as talented as you are, particularly compared to the opposition that you face, that you don't necessarily have to hide, and you certainly don't have to protect your defense. If it means that you've got to go with tempo, if it means that you think you've got to necessarily put yourself in a place to maybe have 10, 12 more snaps in a game than you would otherwise, then I would very much hope to see that that Florida State has the ability to start to incorporate some sort of offense that maximizes the talent that it has around it.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about this defense too, man. Just thinking about this, I just a couple parting thoughts here, especially because this is probably going to be the last show I do before I go on vacation. Man. You get Naughty and Christmas in the middle, Fred Jones and Wally Ime are your backups. I mean, Marvin Wilson might legitimately be your number five defensive tackle on this team. Mm-hmm. That guy looks like a beast. He's reshaped his body.
Shame that kid really came in out of shape.
Man.
Good for him.
Jalen Parks looks like he's gained 40 pounds since high school, and it looks absolutely great. I had a call today with a scout, actually, who I know pretty well, and we were talking about some of, you know, where some regions of the country are deficient in certain positions of talent this year. And he was like, by the way, your boys from Florida State were really smart or lucky or both to get Wilson and Parks and Durden in the same year. Cause this year's defensive tackle crop nationally is really not that good. So it kind of increases those kids' value that they signed last year. If you do it before a year where there's really not a whole lot of good guys to go get. And I know he was pretty high on all three of them. I'm high on Parks as well. I think he's a damn good football player. And I'm glad to see him gain that weight. Defensive end, if they can get teams in some third and longs, which I think they're going to do a better job of this year, Brian Burns should clean up. I like Josh Sweat. You know, at linebacker, it may still be the two fifth-year seniors in Matt Thomas and Roderick Hoskins, but at the same time, it's not like they're not going to be pushed.
Yeah, you know, Jackson put himself in a great place last year.
He showed up in good shape, man. Did you see that Instagram? Mm-hmm. One of the last Instagrams he posted on an Instagram story, I think he was 229. That's probably a loss of like 10 pounds for him, and it looks like he's in better shape, going to be able to run better. I think you got better depth in the secondary than you've had in a while. I like this team a whole lot. Now, do I think it should be rated higher than number three to start the year? No, I don't. But, man, if you're behind just those two, I don't mind that at all. I'm pretty excited about this team as it goes into fall camp. Hopefully, knock on wood, it stays healthy.
It's a great team. It's got a lot of experience. It's got a lot of third-year players on the roster. Just when you look at it, and it's got a piece that really gives you an optimism at pretty much every place on the field. So exciting to see what comes of this this camp. And look, it's August 1st. It's Jimbo Fisher opening. It's very much a time that, as a college football fan, you can kind of validate, turn in your focus to the season, to where, you know, it's not a week away or anything like that, but season will be here before you know it, and it's no longer kind of the dead period of summer where we're just slogging through each day, hoping to get to a place where football is kind of on the horizon.
Absolutely, man. All right, so we may or may not do an episode when I'm in Hawaii. You may do a solo episode. I think that'd be cool. Until then, we will talk to you later. Let's please also hit us up with those great reviews on iTunes, 5 stars if you can. We always love those. Obviously, 5-star recruits, 5-star reviews. And also, you can find us as well on Google Play Music, Stitcher, and a couple other outlets. If there's a podcast app that you want us on that you can't find us on, just let us know, and we'll try to get on there before the season.
I'm going to do something that we don't do a whole lot of real quickly before we sign off, but I'm gonna pimp somebody else's product for him. This is a conversation that I was having with you, a personal conversation a couple weeks ago, where somehow we started talking about the Dunbar basketball team in Baltimore. I mentioned it. ESPN 30 for 30 is doing something a week from today, so August 8th. That I doubt you'll interrupt your Hawaii vacation to take a look at, but keep in the back of your mind, it looks like a particularly interesting piece of content. I'm somewhat familiar with that team. It had 4 NBA players, and there's a real interesting story to be woven within Baltimore, the city, and this basketball team. So excited to see what they do with that, and I will also mention that ESPN 30 for 30 also has something coming out, I think in 3 weeks, that's about the 1988 Dallas Carter football team. That is one of the better football teams ever put together. Had Jesse Armstead, which was an All-American NFL player. If you want a Florida State tie-in, Clifton Abraham, future All-American corner, was on that team. An All-American safety that signed with Tennessee was on that team. It's featured prominently in the book that I mentioned. Not that I mentioned as though I brought this to everybody's attention, but a couple months ago we were talking about my fondness for the book Friday Night Lights. This Dallas Carter team is prominently featured in that book as well. So just 2 pieces of high school athletic content that's been worked into the 30 for 30 series that I thought I would mention and just let our listener base know about.
I'm definitely going to check those out when I get back. I think it was a pretty good little back-to-back shows here, and I'm actually looking forward to see, you know, if you do a solo one or if you have David on or another guest, what we got cooking.
Yeah, we'll keep it rolling, man. Enjoy your time in Hawaii, and when you get back, we'll be all the more closer to toe meat and leather.
All right, man.
This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenolcast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nolcast. Today's music is Gregory Porter's Real Good Hands. Today is August 2nd, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.
Mama, don't you worry about your daughter, cause you're leaving her in real good hands. I'm a real good man. Now the picture of this man is slowly coming into view. Papa, don't you fret and don't forget that one day you was in my shoes. Somehow you paid your dues. Now you're the picture of the man that I someday wanna be. I know it's hard watching the changes in our lives, but I wanna make your daughter my wife. Mama, don't you worry about your daughter, cause you're leaving her in real good hands. I'm a real good man.